The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is a sweet life.
Sweet life.
Cheese Johnson. Malik Rashid. Sitting here with world renowned.
Wow. What?
Run that back.
Wow.
World renowned.
Eric.
World renowned chef, Naisha Joyce Arrington.
Yes, sir.
We are here.
What's happening?
I feel like we just had a full-on episode before the cameras even rolled up.
That's when the vibes are immaculate.
But that's great, though. That's great. Thank you for being here
with us.
We appreciate it. I know you train. Were you training for something, right?
I am. I have my first fitness competition coming up. Really excited about it. Okay. Lots of barbell work and pull-ups and assault bike, and it's a team challenge, and it's my first one, and I'm really excited. So
not only can she cook, run up on her. You're going to find out.
Fuck around and find out.
Again, thanks for having us. We have so much to talk about, but for me, I would love to start at, the beginning. This is our first time meeting. I read a little bit about you. I never could trust about what's on Wikipedia and things, but you kind of made it when you got a Wikipedia page. But
do I have one?
Native Angeleno?
Correct.
And you are, let me get this right, Black and Korean.
Correct. And a little Native American in there too.
Okay. You got some of that, you know what I'm saying? What was it like growing up in LA and the fusion of these cultures? I know a lot of Black and Korean kids, because where I'm from, it was a military town.
Exactly.
And, I think the brothers went over there and it was like, yo,
exactly.
What's good? They were sending satin jackets back to everybody in the hood.
Wow.
But what was that like growing up? So you were from a military family?
Oh, man.
The satin jacket.
Real, that was fire, right? With the dragons on the back?
Yes. No,
right.
Fire. Oh, man. That's exactly what happened. My grandfather, who was a cook in the Korean War, went to Korea, brought my grandmother back, and my grandfather, African American, met Miss Isoon, and I actually have a sauce inspired by her that I brought for you guys. And so they had my mom. And my mom and dad met here in Los Angeles. And what else can I say? Yeah, I mean, that's...
Tell people, let's. I don't want to skip past your father.
Please.
So your father, if I'm not mistaken, right, was in Brothers Johnston?
You guys did your homework. Yes, so my dad is a phenomenal slap bass player. I come from, on his side as, creatives. The guy has so much soul in his freaking thumb. I wish he hasn't pursued his music career yet. I feel like my dream for him is to retire this man and get him out there playing funk music. So he taught the Brothers Johnston actually how to play the bass.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. He was never kind of formally. He had a little band. Not a little band. He might be like my little one.
My little band.
Yeah. He had a band called Phase back in the day. And he has this amazing photo of him with his bandmates. And he's like fire bell-bottom jeans with the big afro, with the bass guitar. Just too fire.
That's dope.
I know.
Yeah. What part of LA did you grow up in?
So I was born at the Kaiser Hospital in West LA on Venice Boulevard. Yeah. We moved to Gardena. Spent a lot of time in Gardena. And then basically kind of moved around a little bit, and then actually moved to a place called Lancaster, California. Yep. Do you guys know it?
My cousin lives out there, okay. And he's a professional stuntman.
What is in Lancaster? Just tell it's me, just for real.
Cheaper houses, yeah, and, exactly. And more room.
Exactly. When gangs started getting, you know, yep. elevated in like, you know, 80s, around there, 80s, 90s, like 90s, my parents, they didn't want me to grow up in LA. So, you know, and they wanted to buy a house. So they moved out to Lancaster, and I grew up in an amazing, you know, had an amazing childhood and got to play outside and ride my yep. bike and stay out in the street till the streetlights came on and went home, you know, and yeah. that was a thing, you know, but I didn't think my parents wanted that for me here in Los Angeles. But all my aunts lived here, and my dad's side's from Mississippi, actually.
Okay.
So all of that side of my family from Past Christian, Mississippi, and all my aunties were out here. So every Sunday, my mom would make us wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning and go to Crenshaw Christian Center, and we would go to church every freaking Sunday growing
Wait,
up.
Wait, from Lancaster.
Yes.
That's like a real hour plus drive.
I'm saying it's about an hour. And like, I just remember that as a kid, like crying, like not wanting to go, you know, but looking back, it's good. It's good, yeah. you know, to instill values and morals and just discipline, right? So I think those little things, they add up to a lot in your adult life. But, you know, we grew up in Lancaster. I moved out here to LA when I was 17, officially.
Okay.
Went to culinary school in Santa Monica, where I live now. And have had a quite the journey to date.
When did you identify cooking as the thing for you, like a real passion, and a passion that you could potentially create what you have created, which is a burgeoning empire?
Wow.
Is that's a fair assessment?
I mean, one would like to think.
You have a restaurant in LAX at the Delta Terminal.
What are we talking about? Named Gordon Ramsay. Yeah.
I think the season finale is tonight.
It is. Okay. Yes, sir. Yes,
so then,
sir.
With that said, go ahead.
I mean, you know, it's it feels almost, I'll say, taboo when you actually think about it, because it's like to dream and then actually actualize your dreams. It's like, when you harness that power, it feels so freaking powerful. You mm-hmm. see? So it's almost like this thing where it's like, but it's cool. You know, I believe in manifestation. I believe in, you know, action and executing a good plan. And that's what I did from a kid, you know, and from, I would say, you know, being in the kitchen with my grandmother and learning these new flavors and spices and feeling like I was in a new world just by hanging out with my grandma. You know, I think that was like the original steps in me kind of developing my palate at a young age. And then I always, like, when I think about those memories, they feel very like golden in my spirit. They're just fond memories. And, you know, I think really throughout my adolescent stages, when I was a kid, I would like run home from school and always be in the kitchen. I would like have my friends over. I would play restaurant. I would like make little soups. I would like always with my little easy bake oven. I would just always be like doing things. And, you know, I have a very creative mind. So like food for me is sort of one conduit of expression. You know, for me, I look at this plate and I look at it as a canvas, you know, of creation, of storytelling, of celebrating Mother Nature. There's so many opportunities to connect with people, right? To nurture. And those are the things I'm good at, you know, and I learned that as a kid, you know, and I would say, you know, really to answer your question, I think it was my parents. You know, they put me in a lot of things when I was a kid, like art school or like karate. I did a lot of martial arts until I was about 17, and competed and did, you know, I was heavy on that. I played sports, you know, so I think I took something from all those disciplines and then did the thing that I was passionate about. And it just helped me sustain and have staying power, because the restaurant business is not for the faint of heart. It's really hard, you know. For sure.
It's one of the toughest industries to be in.
Especially in Los Angeles. Like
100%.
Yeah.
I remember a time you came from, you know, being in the clubs and all of that kind of restaurants were closing right and left out right. here. I remember like Memphis.
Right.
Lodge Steakhouse.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like them joints would be opening and closing like this. So,
100%.
So, you know, to, and that's, I think we talked about this even before you walked in. Sustaining, and you talked about this prior to the cameras rolling, sustaining a restaurant in Los Angeles or just anywhere is tough, right?
Yes.
And you spoke about an experience that you had, you know, last year. And then I want to, like, during the pandemic and all these different things, like, how were you able to push through those challenging moments? Those very challenging, when you're like, yo, I don't know if I can continue. Like, yeah. This is happening. We had a pandemic. Restaurants were shutting down. Like, how did you push through, and how do you encourage other people to do those things?
Well, I'll answer that based on my personal experience. Okay. About 6 months before the pandemic, I closed my restaurant. And, you know, there's a few things not working, but I would say ultimately it was a lot of years leading up to a lot of self-actualization. And I think people in the entrepreneur space, people who have a growth mindset mentality, they press go, and a lot of times they just don't look back, you know, and do self-inventory. And that for me was definitely where I was at, you know, for sure. I was just like, look at the cutting board. You know, 2001, I set out, and I didn't look up since. I was just grinding and grinding and grinding and not taking care of myself. And, you know, I think that was the year I was like, I want to be a better human and whole so that I can give from a healthy mindset, you know. And that's when I fell in love with fitness. And, you know, I think that's really where things started to shift for me internally, you know. And so, you know, I think the restaurant business, it has this culture, this, you know, which is starting to see this like rectification in it, but this culture, this underbelly of like, you know, it's a nightlife kind of thing. You know, it's like the cooks are getting off late. It's like, what do you do to wind down? You go have a cocktail, you know, you're eating late, like what's available, most likely fast food, you know? And you know, your shift starts at 2, so you sleep in late. It's like this culture that you just sort of become accustomed to. And Anthony Bourdain, you know, I think Kitchen Confidential, that book really articulates what it's like, you know, to have that lifestyle. And I very much leaned into that kind of like surly, I am a cook, I'm a badass, like I play hard, I work hard mentality for a lot of years. Yeah. You know, because you couldn't tell me nothing. Like when I was on the line, I like would show up, I would have the sharpest knife in the kitchen, and I approached being a line cook like a Jedi. Like I was like, this is my force, you know, and it's something that it was a very spiritual practice for me. And I, to this day, you know, I just feel like I could walk in any kitchen and I, you know, they call me the ninja, like on some like TV shows and stuff, because like, I feel it in my soul. You know, I feel the kitchen and like the way it moves, the way it sounds, like it's an articulation from within and outward onto a plate for a guest to enjoy. But, you know, I'm saying a lot, but what I really want to say is like, you know, I think those days when I wanted to give up, it was like, it's very hard, you know, when your dishwasher doesn't show up and you have to go in and tend to like wash dishes, or you have to do that, or you have to do this. But I think, you know, in 2019, that's really where I started to see the biggest shift for me, you know, and having that time during the pandemic. And I think a lot of people had a different approach to it. You know, the restaurant business had an opportunity to change. You know, ultimately, there were a lot of gatekeepers in the restaurant business. You know, there wasn't a lot of people of color being celebrated, different ethnic backgrounds of foods being celebrated. There was a lot of, you know, the kitchens I came up in, fine dining European kitchens being celebrated, right? Mm-hmm. And saying, this is the industry standard. I know that's what they told me when I was in culinary school. White tablecloth, fine dining, 3-star Michelin is the best. That's what you should work towards. And I was like, bet, that's what I'm going to do. If that's the, what I'm going to be the first bar. Everything. Like, yeah. I just was like, oh, there's not a lot of women. It's not a lot of women. Regardless of that, I just wanted to be the freaking best. Like, yeah. It's not even about color of my skin or my gender. I was like, I just have a performance mindset mentality. And so when I set out, I never really looked back, you know, and, you know, 20 years of that can have certain fragmentation, certain trauma, certain things that you don't address, I think, when you're on that grind, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If that makes sense, you know?
No, yeah. 1,000%. I think you talking about self-inventory, and also too, when you have that mindset where you're just go, go, go,
yeah.
you become disconnected from yourself.
100%.
And, you know, a lot of it also too is where, you know, pride can kick in and self-esteem and all those things. And I can only imagine, like, you know, with you, with your restaurant, with you closing your restaurant, the amount of mental things that go on, the warfare that we go through in our own minds.
Absolutely.
And that's something we like to talk about on this show, because nobody is absolute from that. You know what I mean? Like, we all go through it. And I think learning how to navigate that and take inventory in yourself. Like, I think Clinton Sparks, one of our last guests, said the greatest IP you can have is yourself. And I think people think that's all about business. But your IP is how you look at yourself. It's your self-awareness, your self-esteem, your, you know.
Way you talk to yourself. You talk to yourself.
So, right? You know, that's important here. And I think those are the things that help people navigate, you know, because behind the polished accomplishments, you're still a human, right?
Still got to look at yourself in the mirror every day.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And what does that self-talk look like? Even when people perceive you to be this, you know, whatever it is. I think a lot of people who are in very high places have that, you know, look at that, you know, and it's an interesting conversation, you know, and it's a very healthy one, I think, to have, you know.
When you step onto, you know, the studio, like the television camera, right? And you said you're very performance driven.
Yes.
But there's also got to be a sense of, there's got to be balance, because you got to be playful. It's television.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So how are you learning to balance all of that?
That's a great question, because I'm living it in real time. Yeah. This is my second year being on TV in that way, you know. And I will say it's been an interesting study, and it has sped up my self-inventory for sure, right? Because it's a dual kind of tandem walk. Like, am I, are people receiving my message to be how I want it to be received?
Mm-hmm.
Or are they perceiving me, you know.
Through this filter.
You feel me? So it's interesting. Thing to be aware of, right, at all times. And so I think it has sped up my awareness overall, you know, and my output, right? Because you have to like think about, you know, what your articulation is, and then do it in a small amount of time. Like, it's like very in the moment, you know. And so it's cool, because I think I've done the things in micro sort of doses to have this macro effect, you know, the team sports, the pressure kitchens, high pressure environments, you know, all the things, the art, you know, understanding, you know, what my style of food is, you know, seeing different formats of kitchens, you know, sort of studying different archetypes of humans, you know, and what resonates with me, what do I vibe with? Like, you know what I mean? Like, all those things, that, what is that sum, you know? And so, and to honor that, right, and be that, and don't deviate and feel comfortable in that, is like freaking amazing, powerful, you know? So I would say, when I step out in those kitchens, I am being my best self. I feel so, like, I feel powerful in those moments, because, like, that is my shit. Like,
you know, you.
Like, in a kitchen, like, I'm not saying I am the best on the planet, but I know that. Like, you can't tell me I don't, you know? So, like, but I worked for that, you know, and I knew that as a kid, you know, from a kid. I would, like, run home from school to watch Food Network and watch all these, you know, PBS programs and Essence of Emerald before Celebrity Chef was a thing, you know. I just loved it. And because I think it's not just for the surface. It's for the value that it has that makes us human.
Yeah.
You know, like, food, this grew up and was raised by, you know, nutrients, right? It is a product of our land, our earth, you know? So it's for me to be simply a conduit of that dialogue, right? Like where that tomato was grown, right? Like the recipes and the storytelling behind that, the culture, like that shit makes us human, especially in the digital age, right? It's that gateway into the past and it's a bridge into the future. And I think for me to be able to do that every day, like I'm so freaking grateful that I found my calling in life.
So being a part of, I guess, talking about the, I almost call it a renaissance of like culinary because it's so front facing now and it used
to be
a behind the scenes kind of thing. And you've been on all the sides of, you've owned your own restaurant, you've had a restaurant, now you're on television. And then there's also now like with social media and all those things, do you think, has it hurt the industry?
Great question.
At all? Or, you know, I think there's a ton of positive things, but also I'd look at it as like music, you know, when streaming came along, it's amazing technology to help people get music, but it also puts so much stuff out there to where it's like, kind of waters down the art form of it. So I just wanted to kind of get your take on.
Yeah, I would agree with both sides of that. And I think with any art, like anything that comes from the like intangible that becomes something, like it is an art, right? And I think not anybody could just do that. Like, I guess that's subjective.
No, it's not.
You know what I mean?
No, it's not.
And so it's like.
No, it's not.
You know what I mean?
But I get it.
No, we're saying the same thing. It's like, you cook a meal, I cook a meal. It's like, oh, they're both art, but like, are they? You know, but I think there's like, that's the conversation is about like the craft, right? Like, I think also, you know, I think people having access to the public is what's interesting. You know, it's like, people can go on social media and say, I am a chef. And, you know, people are not going to tell you you're not, or they might, might tell you you're not. But, you know, I think it's about different facets of celebrating food. You know, some people are business people and they say like, I'm going to take this smash burger and I'm going to build this smash burger empire by X, Y, and Z and build a machine. And, you know, they can multiply and scale that for per 500 businesses, you know, and other people are like, I want to create the best blend. And like, that's a facet, you know, and I think, you know, I think you can split it up so many ways. There's a lot of opportunity for people to do a lot of things well. The interesting thing, and I will say, I myself am on the other side of this sort of like query now, is that, you know, in the past, so we'll call it like 2009-ish, when I was like, you know, in this 3-star Michelin restaurant, and I was like, you couldn't tell me that like TV chefs and restaurant chefs were like two completely different people. And I never wanted to be labeled a TV chef, right? Because in my mind, that wasn't a thing at the time. Like, it was like, you were a TV chef or you were a chef, or you were a real chef, you know? And I always want, I was very, it was a very personal thing to me, food. I was like, I never want it to be a gimmick, you know? I never want it to
be to be separated from the craft, from the real.
Are you kidding me?
The starch.
Work too hard to attain those skills, to understand how different salts react to different proteins or what, you know, just from a molecular level, you know, I worked hard for that information. And so, you know, you couldn't tell me. And then, you know, we brought up Gordon Ramsay, you know, and he was the first person that I saw on TV that was doing both, that could put on that chef coat, you know, and walk into any kitchen and throw down on the line and then kill it on TV and have all the Michelin restaurants. I was like, it can be done, you know? And so it's cool. But so fast forward, right, there was sort of that. And I will remember the moment where I had that epiphany. It was when I was watching TV and I saw this gentleman in a kitchen. Pardon me. I saw this commercial and it was a watch commercial and they were like really close up on the watch. And I was like, oh, it's a watch commercial. They panned out. And there was a guy in a chef coat in a kitchen. And I was like, wow, it's a chef. Like, it's a chef-driven commercial about a watch. And I remember that was the first time I saw a chef, like, in mainstream. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was just interesting to me.
Being celebrated in
You know
that
what
way.
I mean? Yeah, exactly. As opposed to just, you know, like, I don't know, like a singer or like a actor, you know, and it was interesting. And I remember that moment. And then, you know, food TV and then food personalities, it started to really become this thing. Excuse me. And that term celebrity chef and all of that, and then Food Network. And so I think that's one era, right? Like 2000s, early 2000s. And then fast forward with digital and like social media, I think that's like the next five layer deep after that, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's so interesting because I'm kind of one foot in old school. I saw the progression where the recipe was like, you know, you have your restaurant, you have your four walls, and people patron your business. You get it right up in the LA Times or New York Times, and that's a wrap. And that's what a chef is.
Yeah.
And now it's like, has had all of these new sort of progressions, right? Yeah. And so with social media, you know, that's what's the interesting thing I like about the show Next Level Chef, where I'm a judge and mentor on, is it's the first of its kind where you see social media chefs, home chefs, right? And also professional chefs all cooking on the same playing field. And so I love the progressiveness in that, because I think there's an opportunity to capitalize on where we are heading, because it's not like we're going to go back, you know? And because before, you know, like when I did Top Chef, it was just professional chefs only had the opportunity to cook on TV.
Yeah.
You know, so it's interesting to see it. I think it's interesting. I think it's two different lanes. I don't know that it waters down the craft, but I do know that on the opposite side, old school chefs have had to change and adapt more than the other way around.
Yeah. I mean, the importance of adaptation and also being able to, I'm not a pivot, but to be resilient enough to be like, okay, this is what it is. You know, it's not going anywhere. Just talk about, you know, maybe some of your, you know, regimen or the frame of mind that you're in to be able to do those things. Cause like you said, a foot in the old school, but then also they approach you and they're like, we want you to come on this show. And, you know, just being able to be open to those things. How do you navigate, you know, some of those things?
Yeah. Well, I think, for me, I always try to have, an insatiable thirst for knowledge. No matter how much I think I know about a subject, if I learn it, I'm like, cool. Well, like, let's learn something new, right? Let's get into fitness. Let's do a competition. I don't know. I'm out here. Like, I'm not nervous about it, but I'm going to try. And I like a challenge, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, even if I don't, you know, win or succeed, I'll try harder the next time, you know? And I think that's when you say resilience. I think those things are so freaking important. And when I did my TEDx talk, I talked about that. I think that is a very valuable life recipe, right? I think it's grit. I think it's perseverance. I think it is resilience. Like all of those things, I think, make up a robust life, you know, and a life worth, you know, attaining to greatness. I don't think like anyone's ever going to just be like, this is it. I've reached greatness. But attaining that on a consistent basis, always trying to strive, is what the journey is, you know? So like, I'm about that life. Like I'm about the journey, and I'm not afraid to create areas of opportunity for growth. I don't think it's like about failure, right? I think it's about areas of opportunity to grow and recognizing that, say, I suck at that. Or like, I did not do well at that. I want to do it better next time. I think there's power in that shit.
Absolutely.
You know,
Kobe Bryant said, what is failure? Like, he's like, what is that? He's like, it's, you know, it's just we're in a relentless pursuit of just trying.
Goatness.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But also just trying,
absolutely,
right? Like just making the effort to thrive.
Absolutely.
Like that's all it is. You know, it's effort to thrive. And yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm a fan. So we were introduced by a mutual friend. That's almost over a year ago.
Just about.
And we've been trying to like, you know, get her on the show and be like, oh, I'm going to be in Europe and I got to travel and it's going to be months and I'm going to be on the set here and there. And So I'm happy to finally get you on, but I also, again, I want to celebrate you, and because you come from, so doing this show, we've had the opportunity to sit with a couple of chefs, Matt Horn.
Yes.
Martin,
know them both.
Yeah. Chef, Keith Corbin.
Yes.
Big fan. So that's what I was going to ask. Is there a community? Are you guys sharing information, how to navigate through some of the business? Because there's the experience for you guys is different. So I would think that you guys would form community or want to form community to help each other, to empower each other to get to the next space.
Yeah, I think.
Does that happen?
It happens on small levels. Excuse me. So I think community, it happens on, sort of small groups, right? Like Matt and I went to, he was down here and we went to the Serving Spoon for breakfast, favorite spot. And we were talking about the business, we were talking about entertainment because he's like, I'm getting into it, and we had an amazing conversation around that. So I think sharing knowledge is very valuable. And I think it's one of the more close-knit communities of sharing knowledge for sure. Absolutely.
I had just a quick question when you brought up the TED Talk, TEDx Talk. How long did they give you to prepare for that?
It was so stressful.
I was so curious.
It was so stressful. It wasn't stressful. I should say that. It was one of the first times that I feel like I truly stopped and really, really took inventory. Like I cried three times writing this dang TED Talk because the topic of conversation was reflection. And it was just so many powerful moments that I haven't stopped and really thought about, and I was writing multiple drafts, creating a PowerPoint around it, thinking through my life and presenting it in front of thousands of people. It was very, very challenging. So they gave me, I want to say 8 weeks to write it. And I think everyone has different time to do it. And so I had basically 2 months, but that was already kind of on top of my regularly scheduled program. So it was when I could and then randomly my cat had to be rushed to the hospital and I was literally in the vet thing, writing it. Oh my gosh. It was an amazing experience for sure. I think, and just even with writing the PowerPoint was hard. That was hardest. I think for me is keeping my cadence of conversation and clicking the thing and having it all match up. It was a lot to manage.
And you gotta walk back and forth.
And smile and do the things and not trip. I wore these heels and I was out here on my boss lady shit. Yeah. And it was cool. It was a very powerful moment. Experience. It was a great, great experience.
Yeah. That's to me, that's the Grammys of business. Yeah. You've made you got a TED Talk. Yeah. You've that's,
big deal.
That's a huge accomplishment. Yeah. We were talking earlier about your new spot.
Yes.
In the new, I guess Delta built a fly wing at LAX. Finally, they done did something over there.
Sure did.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah, it's a great, great conversation to have. So, being a native Angeleno, I always want to celebrate LA cuisine. And so I called my restaurant Native, which originally was in Santa Monica. And it has reincarnated into the Delta Terminal and still get to celebrate that. He celebrated the decor, said how beautiful it was.
Yeah, and aesthetically. Fire.
Yeah, and it really gives the LA vibe. And I think it's something cool to offer that you don't expect in an airport. That my operating partners are amazing. They're actually one of the only James Beard nominated operating partners out there. Wow. And they're out of Atlanta. Staff is happy. That's what I love to see the most. That is a reflection of, what the guest receives, I think, having a happy staff. And, for me, it's my first venture like this. And it's been really cool. I look at it kind of we have a captive audience. Like, we're always going to have people that are traveling, you know? So it's like, it's a cool opportunity to create and have these sort of parameters, right? And I kind of look at it kind of related slash not related when talking about creation and parameters. I had the opportunity to travel with Stevie Wonder, and it was like really cool to like take into consideration someone who doesn't see the food, right? And I had to really think about kind of these different ways to connect with someone, you know? And it's like, I like tasks like that where it's like, oh, I get this new blank canvas to create. And that's how I look at it at this project. And it is freaking killing it. We've been there about almost 6 months now, and we're about to do a big menu change. And it's phenomenal. So, I mean, a big shout out to them. This team holds it down. They're stoked. They bring their A game every day. And it's really beautiful.
So when you go through a menu change,
it's hard. It's a lot of layers. Like in a regular restaurant, we could be like, oh, we're going to the farmer's market. We were inspired by this beautiful Tangelo, and we're going to run this amazing citrus salad with cured salmon, blah, blah, blah. And it'll be on the menu tonight. Like there, it's like, you have to really go through, you have to get approval from the airport, you have to have the sourcing, all the coding, you know, it's a long process. It's like months as opposed to that night. So a lot of different systems there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also storytelling. So you like have to be, I would assume, in a mindset to where you're like staying true to what you do, but also pushing the boundaries.
Exactly. Like, I don't want to go too far, you know, but and have it be, I want it to be approachable, but I also want it to tell the story and be on brand for the restaurant. You know, when people come to Los Angeles, it's like, come to this restaurant because this is as LA is going to get here. You know what I mean? Like from a little bit of an elevated experience, you can have a beautiful craft cocktail, you know, delicious, you know, smash burger. You can have amazing Korean fried chicken. Like, it really tells the sort of terroir of LA.
I might need to
shout out to grandma.
Miss Isu, for sure.
Miss Isu. Yeah.
Might need to like just create a layover, like just to eat.
Flying, you know, nowhere.
Just like, let me get here 2 hours early,
yes,
to the airport.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
We love that.
That's amazing.
Absolutely.
And get on the plane lit. You know what I mean?
Do you get enough time to sit back and kind of like look at everything you've created and pat yourself on the back and just reflect on, you know, being in the kitchen with grandma to now you're standing in front of your restaurant in LAX?
Come on.
No, I haven't.
Think about where you cooking like has taken you.
Yeah.
All over the world.
Yeah. Stevie Wonder.
Stevie Wonder.
The eighth wonder of the world.
Wow.
Yeah. No, I say this, it feels weird because I love it so much. It feels like a guilty pleasure.
Mm.
You know, it feels like I do this like for fun, you know, like I love it. I love the craft of it. I love the business of it. I love that it makes me feel like a human being, and I love the joy that it brings other people. Like, that's really why I cook, you know? And then to be able to build this legacy off of it is an added bonus, you know? So, you know, I think the older I get, yes, I am trying to take more stock and inventory in more, like a higher cadence of time, as opposed to like take 20 years, then stop down and be like, what did we do again? No, yeah. It happens a lot more quicker these days, mm-hmm. You know, and I'm grateful, you know, I show gratitude as much as possible. You know, I think, you know, it's definitely been a long uphill battle, and I'm pretty sure it probably will continue to be, you know,
absolutely,
for sure. But yeah, you know, there are moments where I wish I could have told like 20-year-old Naisha, like, everything that you're working towards will happen, you know?
It'll be okay.
Yeah, it's going to be okay. I really do wish I could have gone in sometimes and been like, girl, like, it is going to be okay.
It's going to whoop your ass, and but it's going to be okay.
Like, back and forth. Shit. You know, but like, you know, gave her a little pat on the back and been like, it's going to be cool. But, you know, and I don't know. And it's a day-to-day thing, you know? Yeah. It's like,
what is, you spoke about legacy. What is the legacy you want to leave behind?
Yeah, I mean, that's a beautiful question. Like, for me, one of the most important things for me is to like take care of my family, you know, because my mom and dad, I grew up in a very blue collar, humble home. You know, looking back, I don't think my parents, you know, they did the best they could. And I think looking back, I would have not known that we probably weren't that well off, you know, in all honesty, like thinking back and like remembering going to the grocery store and being like, oh, we have $100 to spend on groceries. Like I spent $100 on groceries for myself in a minute, but I know there's inflation now, but it's like for two kids and two parents and a dog and a cat, $100 a week. Like I remember those days, like, dang. Yeah. You know, and it's like looking back on those times, I'm like, wow, like you guys really did the best you could, you know, and I would have never known. And so, you know, I think today one of my biggest goals is to try to take care of my parents because my mom, you know, she had a stroke probably like, I don't know, 15 years ago or so. And ever since then, like my dad, he takes care of her hand and foot, like does everything and works full time still, you know, and it's like he doesn't complain. You would never, like, he's just the type of guy that would just give an aunt his last bite of food. And he has such a beautiful mind and such a universal perspective and a rational perspective on who we are on this one planet in our entire Milky Way galaxy. You know, and it's like, it's a beautiful thing and it puts things into perspective. And so, you know, for me, I just would love for my dad specifically, you know, I wanted to help my family as much as I can, but my dad specifically, like, never taken a vacation, never been on a flight, like just give him some joy, you know.
You want that for him.
I really need that for him, you know.
Yeah,
so that's my big legacy, I think. Yeah. from that perspective, from like a culinary perspective, I would love to try to have more women in the kitchen, because coming up I was 99.9% the only one, and I never looked at that as a disadvantage. I just showed up as Naisha, like I'm a badass cook, you know. But nowadays, I feel like if there's not opportunities given to other people, like how do we just change that narrative? You know, it's not about me climbing up that ladder, did all that work and then just pull it up. You know, like I would love to try to nurture that soil more, too.
Who's on your everybody's in the list now, right? Like,
yeah,
Mount Rushmore, this, whatever. For you, who's on your Mount Rushmore of cooking?
And Burger King's not an actual person, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. We've had such a flux in like the last 22 years I've been cooking. Yeah, 22 years now. I need to take a beat on that. That
who is I got a question.
Who would you want to share? Okay, so let's do this. Give me, there's a dinner table.
Okay.
Right? And you're cooking for five people.
Yes.
Who are the chefs that you want to help you prepare the meal for these five important people?
Wow.
And they can be dead or alive, so give me the five people. Wow. And then who are you, who
that kitchen's about to be lit.
Okay.
Wow,
let's give me the who's sitting at the table first. Who are we cooking for?
Okay, we are cooking for, what a question.
That's pretty dope. You have, I mean, I give you that one. That's a good question.
Thanks.
Right. Right.
It's fire.
Very fire. Okay, so maybe I'll pick like one person from different genres.
Whatever,
that'll help
but
me
five
narrow
people,
it down.
Yeah, film, sport, whatever. It could be your aunt, someone who's passed, and your
family. Yep, I'm going to say
five people.
From like the entertainment world, I love Issa Rae. I would love to cook for her.
Okay.
I'm going to say from like the sports world, I'm going to say Kobe Bryant.
Issa and Kobe at the table. Okay.
Yeah, I'm gonna say Barack Obama.
Okay.
Barry.
I'm gonna say Martha Stewart because she's like a legend.
Wow.
She's gangster.
She's dope.
She a gangster.
Okay.
One more.
And the bonus most amazing celebrated individual at the dinner table will be you.
Okay.
There you have it.
There we go.
Okay.
You get to sit at the table with Pam. All right, cool.
And then in the kitchen, I got to say Gordon Ramsay. I've always wanted to cook in the kitchen with him. He's like so amazing. Yeah, I would say Gordon Ramsay, Anthony Bourdain. I would say Edna Lewis. I would say...
So if you're picking these people, what are they preparing? Because I see on the shows, you guys are all preparing the dish. What are they preparing? Somebody's preparing dessert. Someone's preparing the... Free, what? Who's preparing what?
Well, Gordon would have to probably make the Wellington. He's very well known for that.
Okay.
I would do the fish course. I would have Miss Edna Lewis make the appetizer. I would have...
Edna on the appetizer.
Edna on the apps. Okay. I would have... I need a dessert. I would have Alice Waters do the salad. She's amazing and has been such a pioneer for farm-to-table produce. And for dessert, I would have... This is a hard question.
Come on. Got this.
There's so many names swirling my mind so quickly.
But you're being political.
It's okay if it's
it don't
Sarah
matter.
Lee.
Yeah. Am I being political? I'm being too.
Yeah, just who do you want?
I would make Martha get up from the table and help us with dessert.
Martha.
There you go. There it is.
That's the dinner.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I have one more question. Is it hard for you to go eat at restaurants? Are you like dissecting the food? Like, oh, can you tell the chef I need another pinch of salt? I need it. Is it difficult?
Well, I want to say also I would have my parents at the table. That's very important. No, it's not. I really enjoy when people cook for me because it never happens. Mm. I love to eat. I'm like big on dining out, which is why I think partially I became a chef because I really love to dine. I like love to go to restaurants. I don't actually like critique food very harshly. I notice things, but I just like see it for what it is, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. And then do you have a couple like go-to restaurants?
Yeah, I want to hear this because I'm going to tell you mine.
Okay.
All right, but let's go with you
first.
Well,
I'm a big fan of Serving Spoon for breakfast. That's like my go-to spot. I always say
Inglewood.
Oh, it's my favorite.
Come on, man.
I mean, I just feel like every time I go there, like it's a vibe. Yeah. Like I feel like I'm on Saturday morning. Like
you got to go on Saturday morning.
You know what I mean?
You need the parking lot.
100%.
You need the whole parking 100%.
Lot vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Savory grits.
Yep.
100%.
Yep.
I would say Park's Barbecue is my favorite Korean barbecue place.
Where is this again?
K-Town.
Okay.
Yeah, Park's. Okay, yeah, big fan. Yeah. Got a little photo of me on the wall there.
Talk to him, Naisha.
We got breakfast. We got Korean barbecue. I would say there's this really dope restaurant in Santa Monica called Heavy Handed. I'm a big like smash burger girl. I already said that multiple times, but their burgers are fire. So
Heavy Handed.
I stay there.
I love
in burgers. Santa Monica.
I highly recommend.
Okay.
Highly recommend.
Heavy Hand.
They're
you
killing
get
it.
You get knees?
Okay.
It's a short rib burger.
He's going to be like, hey, baby, we're going to Heavy Handed tonight.
Yeah, you take them. Like, they grind the meat there. It's super bomb. What else? Yeah, I would say there's this amazing Mexican restaurant called Gilbert's in my neighborhood. I hit them up quite often. Okay. Really delicious.
Okay. Now, are you anti fast food?
So my first job ever was Taco Bell.
Okay.
And it was game over from there. I was like, I need to live and work on the line. I started out as a cashier and I would always watch the cooks and I was like, I need to get over there. And
to the soy tacos.
And I never left. And okay. I never left. But no, I'm not anti fast food. Yeah, I love In-N-Out, Taco Bell. Those are my favorites.
Yeah. Taco Bell's the one. If you gotta eat like
some
crimey.
Yeah.
Okay.
What you got?
Oh, restaurant?
Yeah.
Ooh, LA for me. We're just dealing with LA.
Yes. Musso and Frank's is pretty bomb too.
Giorgio Baldi,
Okay.
the one on Channel
Of
Road.
course.
Not, because there was E Baldi, remember?
I don't. I've only been to
Okay,
that one.
so there was E Baldi, which was actually in Beverly Hills.
Okay.
But Giorgio Baldi, same family, Channel Road. I need to be in the back room. They got a little side room, straight up. I'm
This
telling the
dude was
truth.
fancy, though.
No, it's not. It's just I like a vibe. I like atmosphere.
For sure.
You get to bring your own music in there, vibe out, drink wine. It's like seven or eight of y'all. Y'all just chill. So I like that's
Respect.
I like that. I like Capo.
Okay, in Santa Monica. Yep, it's beautiful. Pretty high end.
Rustic fire. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I love Capo.
Yeah.
Capo's fire. If I'm doing brunch on Sundays, I'm going to Jelena.
Gotta
Just
do it.
rooftop Jelena.
So fire.
Super easy.
Yeah. Jelena's bomb.
And I like you, seriously, love been going to the Serving Spoon
Serving Spoon
forever. Like the
always
salmon
hits.
croquettes. Come on, man.
Yeah.
Like
Yeah.
you got the salmon croquettes and the and the cheese
They
eggs and
do it
all.
right.
Yeah, they do it right. I like that spot.
Legit.
And then last thing, let me see. So Dirty Boy, Capo. Probably, you know what I haven't found yet? Like I haven't no, you know what I love? Seafood Cove.
Okay.
It's in it's in Garden Grove.
Cool.
And it's a Asian seafood restaurant.
Dope.
Love it.
Dope.
Love it. Love Asian seafood. That's my shit.
Yeah.
So yeah, those are my joints.
Dope.
So
Nice,
see, but
nice.
because you was hating on me
No,
first.
I just knew you was going you eat like you know.
Like to eat.
I know. You fancy. You fancy. You fancy.
Nah.
So what's the next year look like for you? I don't want to go too far ahead. I know you're building
Yeah.
an empire, but what are some things that you got in the pipeline and
Yeah. Yeah, so one thing that has been a constant sort of current in my life is travel. I'm a big proponent of that. I always travel to different parts of the world and I take like a technique or an ingredient and get inspired from it and get inspired from it and then add it to my repertoire. Like that is my identity. Like I consider myself a worldly citizen. And so and by chance, when I closed my restaurant 2 weeks later, I got a call to come to Belize, and that started it all. And I went there and learned about the people and taught, and we filmed it all and shot this amazing. It's called Through the Eyes of an Explorer, and we went to four different islands in Belize and just like cooked with the Garifuna people and learned from these Menotek and just learned a lot about the culture of Belize. And then went to many, many other places, Jamaica, Morocco, Hong Kong, doing this, right? So a couple of those dinners. So this year I'll be doing Greece. I'll be doing Hong Kong again. I'm doing a dinner.
Where in Greece, Mykonos, or where?
I'm not 100% sure yet, but we're talking through the deets now, but it's looking like Greece later this year. And those are the two places that I'm gonna hit up. Jamaica, I did late last year was a vibe. Like definitely need to put that back into rotation
Run
because
that back.
like for real, that was like it was a life-changing trip. It was
Amazing. Really?
yes, it was just some dinners like they just have this like je ne sais quoi about them, like where it just hits like because I think there's this like beautiful energy, right, that you like try to capture and then put it on a plate for someone to enjoy and then have it resonate in their soul. And like that happened. Like I think I brought enough of like Cali vibes in the menu. I brought enough of celebrating the terroir of Jamaica, and I also pushed the envelope in a progressive way to get the local people to eat outside of their comfort zone but also appease to like the expat people. And where it felt like elevated enough, like it just hit on so many levels. And I was proud of the menu, and it was just the team that helped me with it. It was just all around a vibe, it just one of those nights where everyone was just so joyful at the end of it, you know? Yeah.
Look at how she glows when she's talking about it. That's beautiful.
You gotta get back there.
That's beautiful. You said you were a football girl.
I love football. I used to throw the football around with my dad as a kid. And so, and I love sports in general. Like, I'll play any sport. But yeah, I'm a big Rams fan. I've been to many games. I hope to go to a lot of football games this season for sure. I love baseball. So I grew up playing softball.
Okay.
Yep. Been to a bunch of Dodger games. I haven't played pickleball yet. I guess that's like all the rage now.
My cousin is heavy on the pickleball. The one that lives in Lancaster.
Really?
He's it's a professional thing. Stuntman, and he's like, pickleball, change. Every day he get up, he play twice a day.
People love pickleball. Yeah, I need to get on it.
Like, all of these new sports, like, what's the thing? You know, throwing the bean bag.
That's not a sport.
No, but what is it called?
Like, cornhole?
Cornhole, pickleball. And curling. It's all the same.
I think people like pickleball because it's tennis and ping pong, but the court is short. So as you get older, tennis is such a hard and active sport.
So they shorten it,
and it's a, you know, it's still an activity, but it's not as rigorous, you know what I mean? So.
Oh, yeah, that's why my dad was saying he could play. My dad the other day, he was like, I think I'm going to play pickleball. Like, if you don't see... blow out
man,
a knee.
Let that man live.
His hip get blown out. I gotta go be in Atlanta.
Blew my hip out playing pickleball.
Whole hip replacement. Because he wanna go be active.
Crazy, crazy.
Yeah.
Listen, it's been amazing. Thank you so much.
Oh, man. My pleasure. I could sit around and chat with you guys all day. It's beautiful.
We're going to do it again.
But I got to have, we got to get you. I mean, I know nobody cooks for you, and I hate to add on to the nobody cooks for you, but I need to add on to.
However.
Maybe we could do another one. I know we got to, it'd probably be crazy clearance, but to be able to go and do something at your spot at LAX would be really cool.
Yeah,
and have some people come over and chill with us and.
Totally.
Cook and eat and talk.
We got to call up Martha, Barack, all these guys. Get them over here at the dinner table.
So we try to get somebody from the Rams. Try to get like Mookie Betts from the Dodgers.
Let's do that.
No, we're going to manifest it.
100%. It's out there now.
Let's manifest it.
Before we get out of here, where can people check you out and, you know, just continue to follow the journey and continue to be inspired? I'm inspired.
Tonight on Fox.
There's that. There's a whole... 2-hour season finale on Fox.
Can you tell them the show for those who just don't know?
100%. So I am a chef and mentor on, chef, judge, and mentor on a show called Next Level Chef. And the show is based on the premise and the idea that I basically get to coach, these hopefuls to win a 1-year mentorship from myself, Gordon Ramsay, and Richard Blaze. Plus $250,000 to fuel their culinary dreams. I know. And the title of Next Level Chef. So it's like, literally when they called to ask me to do this show, like, I was like, this is like the best of all the worlds. Because it's not me actually competing for it, but I get to be adjacent and I know exactly how it feels to be you. Yeah. And I can help you steer your train back on the tracks when it's like, you're trying to do so many things at one time. I get it. I feel it. I understand it. But I get to be in the kitchen kind of helping everyone. So it's really cool. And I see them grow over the course of 15 episodes, right? From when they walk into day one to when that person walks out as the next level chef. They go through a gauntlet and it is hard. It is very hard. And so that show, the finale is tonight.
There we go.
Yeah, really exciting. So there's that. I'm also on Instagram, first name, Naisha. And my middle name, Joyce, Naisha Joyce, and same handle at Twitter. Those are like the main things.
There you go.
Websites,
all
the stuff.
You're not making omelets on the TikTok?
I'm trying. I need to up my TikTok game. I really do.
You're too busy. You need to just find somebody to run it
yeah,
for
exactly.
you.
Yeah, exactly.
But thank you so much.
My pleasure.
You know, for sitting with us. You know, nothing but blessings, and we're excited to continue to watch you.
Thank you.
Grow and build that legacy.
Thank
we're gonna get Dad on a flight somewhere.
Yeah, that's the goal. It's gonna happen.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. And then we're going to have dinner, me, Chief, you, and Gordon.
Sounds
good.
That's
what we need to do. You know what I mean? Bring a couple cigars.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Sounds good.
I want to have dinner with Gordon Ramsay.
Love that, too.
He's and amazing.
Her, yeah.
I'll cook for all three of you guys.
Let's do it. Listen. No, you sign off.
You sign off.
Sign off. Yo, this is Malik Rashid, Chief Johnson, Naisha Joyce Arrington, and this has been A Sweet Life. Thank you.